25 after 9 on Sunday Extra. Now, it's a charge often brought against the country's educated intellectual elite. First, that it's an educated intellectual elite. And second, that it's a group inclined to a single point of view, a left-skewed worldview from a group that self-selects to perpetuate a culture of like minds. In his new book, Australian Intellectuals, Gregory Malewicz takes it a step further. A quote from him: "This culture of intellectuals has become embedded in key institutions, a subculture isolated from mainstream Australia in intellectual ghettos. It is a world which bristles with hostility, negativity and nihilism." Now, Greg will be speaking on this theme in Sydney later this month, but joins you now, Greg Malewicz. Good morning.
Good morning, Jonathan.
How are we?
Oh, I'm fine this morning.
Now, in a nutshell, what's the problem with Australian intellectuals?
Oh, I think it's part of the problem with Australia, in a sense, that Australia is such a small place that it's extremely difficult to get genuine pluralism.
Now, define that for us. What do you mean by that pluralism? What would that
pluralism
represent?
Pluralism would mean a number of different intellectual tendencies and beliefs and so on. A place where you had genuine competing and conflicting views.
Surely that happens.
It does to a certain extent, but as I said, because it's small, it's very easy for people of a certain type to capture institutions, and then it's very difficult for people who are outsiders to actually make their way into those institutions.
Now you argue that thing of institutional capture that has happened in places like the Australian Academy, and here you argue at the ABC. What's been the history of that? How has that come about?
How does that come about? I mean, it comes about quite logically. It comes about through people selecting other people, through patronage and so on. My sense is that the Australian universities were interestingly more pluralist when I was a student than they are now.
So what's changed?
Well, what changes over time, I'll give you what changes over time is that, people, when they're selecting people for jobs, when they're handing out postgraduate scholarships and the like, certain people get the jobs, other people don't. It's a logical process. You can see it happening very, 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 very simply. And as I say in the book, for example, once you get a group of people who are large enough, it even affects the way in which the market operates for book publishing, because there's a market for certain types of books and other ones find it much more difficult to get published.
I mean, it could just be that Australian society is sort of congealed around a sort of a centralist proposition, that it's difficult for voices from any of the fringes to make themselves heard, mainly because those voices are from the fringes.
No, I think in the case of universities and the intelligentsia, it's not that they're centrist in the sense. They try to portray themselves as being centrist from time to time, but I think, they're far more outside of the range of views of the centre, and they're skewed in particular directions.
Now, the view that you principally claim is underrepresented is one of a sort of Eurocentric conservatism. Would that be?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think there's been a deracination of Australian intellectuals over the past few years. It's like the loss of traditional knowledges or knowledge. I won't say knowledges, that's very postmodern knowledge.
I
forgot myself for a moment, yeah. I mean, when I teach students who don't know any grammar, the knowledge of the past that people took for granted is no longer there in a lot of cases, except in particular situations.
I mean, this could be true while not also being an explanation of your main thesis. I mean, it could be that our education system is failing us and yet still maintains a sense of inquiry and pluralism.
Let me have a think about this for a moment. I think that knowledge is difficult. To have real knowledge, you actually have to work at it. And I think what's been happening in recent times is, for a whole range of reasons, people have gone for easy knowledge.
You argue that the left principally steers Australia away from that Western European heritage. But
some of the left, perhaps, not the whole. There are some people on the left who are very concerned.
Indeed. I mean, that's not a point. You know, the point you make about easy knowledge, about the literary canon that we're, you know, descended from, those things, I think, could be held across the ideological spectrum. I mean, there's another question, though, too, that should our future as a country be conditioned by the accident of our colonial history? I mean, is our future not a rather broader one than that?
Of course we have a broader one. As I've argued elsewhere that, particularly in regard to history, you need to have a balance. You have a balance between, for example, our knowledge of the world, our knowledge of the traditions, and our particular local knowledge. The real issue is that, take for example the national curriculum. In history, it mandated Asia, it mandated Indigenous, but it never mandated our Western heritage, which means that when people come to make decisions about what goes in and what goes out, they have to put in some Asian, they have to put in some Indigenous. That puts the squeeze on the Western heritage. And why did they do that? Why did the people making the setting the parameters actually do that? Because they obviously don't think that our heritage is all that important.
And there's a sense, you claim there, Greg Milleush, of capture around the processes, the decision-making process in those areas.
Yeah, capture, it's a little more chaotic than that. But certainly, yeah, I think there's a tendency for particular groups to get hold of these things and to want to push their agendas.
Now, in your book, Australian Intellectuals, you make a case for, as you ought to, after such a critique of what ought to be done, and Milton plays a role.
Yeah, I think Milton's important. I think we have Shakespeare, but I think Milton is the other great English-speaking poet. He's probably on the nose today because he wrote about religion. But Paradise Lost is an absolutely wonderful poem.
I mean, that's the other part of this argument, is it not? Is the Christian thread, as well as the Western cultural, literary and historical thread, being argued against?
Well, I don't think it's not just argued against. It's actually just ignored or put to one side. You cannot understand Australian history without a recognition that Christianity played a significant role. It even played a role in the early days of the Labor Party. An awful lot of Methodists, for example, in certain places.
You could also argue that you can't understand Australian history without an understanding of events that might incline one to the legendary black armband view of that history.
I mean, the question of the black armband, and this is what I say in the, is that we can't right the wrongs of the past. We can record them, we can bring them to public notice, but we can't say, oh, this was a terrible thing, you know, sort it, and then tear our shirts and say it, and it's our job to right those wrongs. Well, sorry, history is a pretty awful set of events in a lot of cases. And sometimes, again, as I point out, you can have terrible things happen and you can have perfectly good things happen, and unfortunately the two of them go together.
It's a complex thing. Greg Milleush, thanks very much for joining us, and it's a really interesting and nicely nuanced discussion.
Oh, thank you very much. Have a good day.
Greg Milleush wrote the book Australian Intellectuals. It's out now, available in shops. It's 26 minutes away from 10 o'clock.